listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Here on Reality Check Radio, it's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. We are truly blessed. Blessed with our listeners, blessed with our hosts, blessed with our technical support. And we're very blessed this morning because we've got along one of our all-time favourites, Dr. Sarah Farrant. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Rodney, and good morning to our listeners. Great to be back.
Yes. I'm going to drop one on you because we're going to talk about allergies, which is what I asked you about. I'm terrible because it's all about me, right? Because last year, for the first time in my life, I got hay fever. And I thought I had the flu and I couldn't shake it for 3 weeks. And you're probably going to scold me as we get into it, but someone gave me some hay fever medicine. I took it, and within 15 minutes, I was cured. And I thought, my goodness me. So we're going to talk about allergies, but since talking to you, I got food poisoning. And I thought, I was very, very miserable. Let's just say I wasn't keeping food down. I had body doubling cramps and I didn't eat and could hardly, I couldn't take water even. And for three days I didn't eat, and for like a couple of days, I knew I had to keep my fluids up, but I was struggling. One day I had to work, which was, I think I always say this, but at that time it was the worst day of my entire life. And then I was confined to my bed, but I did nothing. I didn't go to my wife said, I'm not going to the doctor. I was very proud because I got a note from our medical thing that I hadn't been to the doctor for 3 years, because ever since COVID, I have a lack of trust. So I said, I'm not going to the doctor. And I just toughed it out. Is that the right thing to do?
Yeah, with regards to food poisoning, well, there's two different camps. So there's the one camp that you got something, your body's got it wrong, and therefore we have to go to someone to get something to take something away. And then which creates the illusion that it's gone because we don't feel it or we don't notice it anymore. And then there's the other camp that says, actually, your body's got it right. It's well functioning to raise an alert to you that says all is not well inside. We're going to find the fastest way to get something out. So with regards to food poisoning then, and something that comes into the body, did you have diarrhea or vomiting or anything, or you just laid low?
Diarrhea.
Or sweats?
Diarrhea, sweats, chills.
Yeah. Okay, great. So when something that is foreign to the body
I didn't vomit, but a couple of times I sort of felt like it.
Okay.
And so I had no hunger. Isn't it terrible? Everyone's listening into my diagnosis.
That's all right. It's all educational purposes, right? So when something that is foreign that comes into the body, or the body identifies it as being foreign, it's going to find the fastest way to get something out. So you've obviously eaten something, we would call it food poisoning, and you decided not to go into the system to get something, to take something away. You decided to write it out, which is great. But the question you've got to ask yourself is, did my body get it wrong or did my body get it right in terms of the response that it had? So in the way I view it, Rodney, is that your body got it right. And it got it right because it sent a trigger to alert you to A, something is going on, and B, your body found the fastest way to get something that was inside of you out. That's an innate system that knows what to do all the time, every time, coordinated by your nerve system to make sure that you can continue to be the best that you can be or the healthiest that you can be. So even though you were laid low, you said for about 3 weeks, didn't you?
No, 3 days.
3 days, beg your pardon, 3 days. So immunity is built within that 7 to 10 days. So for me, when I hear that, I'm like, wow, your body did the best thing. It was great. That's a perfect response to something that's foreign that's coming into the body to say, it's not meant to be here. How can I find the fastest way to get it out? And it's going to do that via vomiting, diarrhea, or by sweating. And you had a perfect response to something that was not meant to be in your body. So your body then is well functioning. Where as I was saying at the beginning, some people may say, oh, there's something wrong, and therefore I've got to go and squash that response. So the innate intelligence of the body chooses the fastest way to get something out that's either going to be diarrhea, sweating, or vomiting.
Do you know, our talks were so comforting in my hour of need, because normally I'd bring my mother and she would comfort me, just, and you feel like a little boy being comforted by mum. And my mum has died. And I doubly felt miserable because I was sick and I couldn't ring mum. And but the strangest thing, Sarah, our talks became a huge comfort to me. Because I was there feeling so miserable. But I turned it, you know how you reframe a thing, like you've taught us to reframe our thinking? I reframed it exactly as you described. And I thought, no, this is my body dealing with what it needs to deal with. It is doing what it needs to do. And so in a funny way, through the sort of discomfort, I wouldn't call it, I mean, the cramps were painful and I was miserable as all sin. And I'm a terrible patient. But I had this great feeling that I was doing absolutely the best that I could do. And I thought, I feel as though I should hydrate. But every time I tried to take a sip of water or electrolytes or warm tea, I just couldn't. I mean, it just goes straight through me. So I thought, no, my body's telling me not yet, not yet, not yet. And it was, in a way, I think the best word is comforting, because I knew I was getting better.
And your body was changing.
Yes, and I didn't. And my wife said, oh, I think you better go to the doctor. I says, nope, I'm not going to those scoundrels. And I came right.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? And that's you know, and that's the wonderful part of this is that so often, Rodney, in these kinds of situations, we've lost all sense of trust in the human body, that that our body keeps getting it wrong. Now, if you had have told me the story and you had have said my body didn't do anything, then that's kind of alarm bells going off for me, because I'm like, okay, well, a body that is not responding to something, that's not good. What is happening neurologically in that body or with that body that would then have it be so suppressed that it wouldn't recognize something that's foreign and therefore wouldn't find the fastest way to get it out? So the fact that your body is responding is a sign of a body that is intelligent. It knows what to do and it can take care of it.
Well, thank you for that. It was a perfect illustration of the power of your teaching to me.
Oh, thank you, Rodney.
Now, my next thing is allergies. What are allergies?
So allergies occur when your immune system reacts to a foreign substance. So that could be bee venom, it could be plants, it could be pet dander is what it's called. So that's like the sloughing of the pet skin, or it could be the fur, or it could be the feathers, depending on what pet you have. But it can also be food. But that then raises the next question, doesn't it, of what is your immune system? And your immune system is this very complex network of cells and tissues and organs and systems that all come together and work together to protect you and also to instigate growth within your body. And then the overarching system of this, or the master communicating system of it all, is your nerve system. So we have, you know, in a short summary, we have like white blood cells, which protect us. And then we have the lymphatic system, which is the small vessels that move the cells around the body. And then we have antibodies, which are like proteins, and they kind of engulf the antigens that may come into the body. So I think when we're talking about, or for me, not I think, I know, when we're talking about allergies, just like the food poisoning, allergies are something that we create in response to something. It's not something we catch. And that to me is a really important distinction for people, because one way is that we're looking at the body as this intelligent being, that it has everything it needs in order to protect us and instigate growth. And then on the other side, we see the body as this sign of weakness, that we've caught something, and then how do we get rid of it? So I guess our body doesn't do anything, for a cat cry, the body doesn't do anything by accident. There is absolute geniusness and intelligence within the system in order to respond to something.
An allergy is caused by something firing our immune system.
Yes.
And our immune system keeps us alive by being able to detect and deal with foreign invasive matter.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not a germ theorist, so hence, you know, we don't catch anything. We create everything in our body in order to have the experience that we need to. So I prefer to always look at the body as this extraordinary intelligent system, with the nerve system sitting at the front and center of that. And it's our nerve system that gives us this feedback physically, chemically, and emotionally to where we are in our life. And I've said the saying before, if we learn to listen to the whispers that our body is giving us, then we start to and we can empower us to make the changes going forward when something is created in the body. But because most people interpret health by how you feel, they will go to someone to get something to take it away. And that, like you said before, is usually in the form of a medication that then creates this illusion that it's not there anymore.
So last year,
yeah,
I've been living down in Central Otago for 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. and I have been around people that have dreadful hay fever, and I always sympathize with them, but I think, it's just a runny nose.
Yeah.
You get it yourself. Yeah. And then last year, I just got this runny nose. I felt like I had the flu. And I thought, something's wrong with me, because I had it for like 2 or 3 weeks and I couldn't shake this, you know, what I just called it, a flu.
Yeah.
And then someone said, you don't think you've got hay fever? Take one of these. And a bit odd, I did, because I don't normally take medicine. Anyway, I took this medicine, and within 15 minutes, I was fine.
Mm.
So what was all that about?
Well, it's interesting. In chiropractic, and certainly for myself and my husband, we have this analogy called the bucket. And over a course of our lifetime, physically, chemically, and emotionally, and because we interpret health by how we feel, and we go into the system to get something, to take something away, usually in the form of a medication, be that via prescription or over the counter, over a period of time, our bucket starts to become full, and it fills up and it fills up and it fills up and it fills up. And then the slightest thing can upset the balance within that bucket or within our system. We don't need a lot of whatever that thing is. So most allergies, to answer your question, I would say it's because your bucket is full and there's not we don't need a large amount of a trigger in order to have your bucket overflowing. And the overflowing part of it is where you get the signs and symptoms. So a very small amount can instigate the signs and symptoms. Now, most allergies are either one of three or a combination of all three. So the first one is that you can have a respiratory response, and that has to do with your lungs and your airways. The second one is that you can have a gut response, and that can be your stomach, the small and the large intestines, and then you can have a skin response, so our external skin. So our respiratory allergies would include hay fever, like what you were just talking about. It's also called allergic rhinitis. Rhinitis has to do with the nose, so it's like an allergic nose. And obviously, as you know, hay fever, because you've experienced it, affects the nose and the eyes and the skin and the lungs. And it's usually a reaction to either dust or pollen or the pet dander that we spoke about earlier. So, you know, the small skin particles of the animal or the fur or the feathers. That's our respiratory allergies. Then we have digestive allergies, and that would include things like bloating and gas and, you know, IBS or irritable bowel syndrome, diarrhea, and it can also be brain fog, Rodney, because 70% of our immune system is actually housed in our gut. We have more neurons lining in our gut from our mouth to our anus than we do in our brain. So what we put into our body
isn't that extraordinary?
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And the more that we are starting to know about the microbiome, the more impact that is having on our health, and the more understanding then of the foods that we put into our body definitely has an effect
just
on how.
Just say that again about the neurons.
So our nerve system, the master communicating system of the body, of which the immune system is one part of it, 70% of our immune system is housed in our gut. And our gut is everything from our mouth all the way to our anus. Think of it like a highway, starting at one ramp, coming on and going all the way out of another ramp. Just think of one big long tube, essentially. But that houses 70% of our immune system. So there's more neurons that sit in that tube, let's say, across that highway, than there are in our brain. So the foods that we put in our body.
When you say neurons, you're meaning like
nerve cells. Yeah. So we have more in there than we do in our brains. That's why.
And I guess because it's so long, right?
Yeah, it's so long, and you know, there's twists and turns to it, of course.
And then I remember reading, that we have 10 times more cells in our gut of bugs than we actually have in our body.
Yeah, yeah. We have a plethora of them on our skin than we have in our skin. It's amazing.
It's extraordinary what goes on in your gut. And we just shovel any old shit down there and expect it to work.
Yeah, and not only the flora on the inside of our gut, Rodney, there's also the flora on the outside, all the bacteria that sits on our skin that we cannot see that forms another barrier to the body.
Distracted you. So this is an amazing system, isn't it?
It is incredible. So the first one or the most common allergies, the respiratory, the gut, and the skin. So the respiratory has to do with the hay fever, like I was just saying. And then we've got the digestive, which is the bloating, the gas, and the irritable bowel syndrome, the diarrhea, and the brain fog. And then we have the skin allergy. So that's eczema, hives, dermatitis, psoriasis, etc. But all of these are inflammatory responses, and you could put them under this catch-cry term, right? Allergenic conditions, if you want to say that. But we create the allergic responses also through other organs or organ systems, not just the respiratory, the gut, and the skin. So, for instance, you can create changes in your heart rate or changes in your blood pressure in response to certain foods. However, most allergies refer to the three that I just mentioned, respiratory, the gut, and the skin. What's interesting about this, Rodney, is that all of these organs are skin organs. Now, this is a critical piece. So our skin is a crucial frontline wall of defense. We have skin on the outside of the body, which we can all see. And then as we enter into the body, that skin starts to differentiate, but it remains skin tissue as we enter into the body via the mouth and all the way out through to the anus. So both of our respiratory system, our lungs, and our digestive system, our gut, are skin tissue called mucosa. So we have epithelial lining, and then we have this mucosa. It's this mucosa that I want to draw the attention to. So the mucosa is another name for a mucous membrane. Now, mucosa lines the inside of the organs and the cavities throughout your body, and they're exposed to particles from the outside. So they form another barrier. So the mucous membrane lubricates, just think mucus, it lubricates and protects the organs and the cavities from particles that the body, the innate intelligence of the body, then deems to be foreign. So you have this very, very thin mucosa on the inside of our cavities, so on the inside of the gut and the lungs and the respiratory system and the gut, whereas we have a very thick skin on the outside of us. So we have skin inside of us and skin outside of us, and most people don't know that. Therefore, when something foreign to the body comes in, one of the first ways the body is going to protect itself is to increase the amount of mucus that it produces in order to help protect the epithelial lining underneath. Interesting.
Got that. And
it's
the key thing for the body.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, is detecting the threat.
Yes.
So all my life, I've been sucking in pollen and dust from pets and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And my bucket's been able to handle it. Then last year, I'm older and wiser.
Mm-hmm.
My bucket's full. I suck in pollen, could be some extra big pollen year or something, or extra dust, and my body detects it as a threat. Hay fever, because that's the runny nose, the mucus, it's fighting what it sees as a threat to my body. Have I got that right?
Yeah. The wheat can also have an impact on the body with runny noses and itching eyes and an increase in mucus, as can dairy. So the three top allergens that are created in the body, or the three top allergens to the body, I should say, is wheat, dairy, and refined sugar. They're the big ones. Now, if I talk you through wheat, because there might be some people that are interested in this, because they might eat a plethora of wheat or have the wheat in their diet. So there's some great books that people can read on this. So there's the Grain Brain, or there's Gut and Psychology. That was by Natasha Campbell McBride. She wrote that a while ago. The Grain Brain by, I think it was David Mueller, I think it was. But anyway, suffice to say that wheat is not the same wheat as we ate when, you know, back in the 1950s, because in the 1950s and the 1960s, they hybridized wheat. And in the hybridization of wheat, they made this this ultra strong wheat. So wheat back in the day, as you would know, and a friend of mine actually did a documentary, I think it's called What's With Wheat. People can go and look that up if they wanted to. Back in the day with wheat, the wheat was really tall, but it would because it got so top heavy, it would fall, right? So what they decided to do was hybridize it. It wouldn't grow as tall, but it would be able to hold the strength or the weight of the wheat. So the hybridization started to create havoc with people's systems when it came to the market in the 1970s. You know, farmers, of course, loved the hybridized part of the wheat because they would get more wheat. It would give them more money when they went to sell the wheat. However, when something is altered from its natural form, it will never, ever turn out well for the human to consume. So all of a sudden, people's systems were not able to tolerate the wheat. Now, we can say all of a sudden, I shouldn't have said that. This can happen insidiously over time, or it can happen immediately for someone who already has a full bucket. So if we cut through to a generation later, so now we're looking at the 1980s, 1990s, and you began to see the damage the intaking or eating wheat was doing to the gut. And then you add the use of chemicals for production of that wheat, and all of a sudden we're adding insult to injury. So wheat in and of itself is everywhere, isn't it? I mean, I remember back in the day when supermarkets weren't in our community. I remember when the first big one was built, we used to go to the local grocer and get our fruit and our veg, and we go to the local butcher. And then the supermarket came in, and the middle section of the supermarket has all the processed foods. So all of a sudden we see wheat is in sauces, and wheat's in cereals, and wheat's in the bread, obviously. It's in biscuits, it's in pizza that became very, the thing to do when pasta and pizza at least came to my town when I was young back in the 1970s. It's in crackers, you know, everything, pies when you go to the local, you know, footy game, you know, you're having a meat pie and, you know, it's laced with wheat. So if you look at those items, that they're regularly consumed in a household, aren't they? So in the 60s and 70s, there was no gluten intolerance. But now it's prolific. I mean, even in the year 2000, you didn't hear, or in the late 1990s, you didn't hear much of gluten intolerance, did you? But now it's so common. And that's because the hybridization of the wheat, people's buckets are full, the molecule comes in and it's unable to be digested, it's seen as foreign as it gets into the blood, and then that increases your mucus production as a means of protection. So if you add medications into this mix, then you're adding more insult to injury, because now the gut flora is so affected, more mucus then has to be produced, but those molecules are getting through in the gut. So those that are, interestingly, Rodney, those people that are gluten-free are turning to gluten-free type foods. However, people are not stopping to read the ingredients. And, I always have said to our kids, if you can't make it in the house, then put it back on the shelf. And most people are only seeing, oh, it's gluten-free, I'll buy that. They pick it up, they pop it in their shopping cart, and off they go, and then they start to consume that food. But a lot of gluten-free products are made with corn or maize. Corn is the word that's used for corn in the United States. Maize is the word that's used for corn in the United Kingdom. Here in New Zealand, we interlace the two. And they're also made of rice. I personally feel that corn will be the next big health problem. And for some people, it already is. So that said, I really encourage people to read the ingredients on the packet and really start to see if that particular brand, like Sanitarium, brings out a gluten-free wheat Bix, is that going to be the best for you to have, and make sure you look at the ingredients. So, those people that are reacting to things like wheat are going to really want to be having, gluten-free, obviously, move away from that. I'll share a bit more of that in a minute. But they'll want to be having a good food-based probiotic. And then they'll also want to be having colloidal minerals. And I think in a couple of shows ago, we spoke about colloidal minerals and how our colloidal minerals, organic from the earth, 15 meters down, 20,000-year-old peat, but there's 72 plus minerals in there, and nothing nasty. But the minerals help to heal the epithelial lining of the gut, which are extraordinary. And then also cooking with coconut oil. Coconut oil is something that, you know, is very healing to the nerve system. And I remember, Rodney, actually, when we were living in, myself and my husband were living in the US, and we worked at our local health food store, Greatest Grains. And this was back in the 1990s, and lots of people at that time were coming in and asking for aloe vera juice and slippery elm. And we were like, okay, well, what's that? What, you know, why is that? But now when I look back, just thinking now with you, I think the reason was because people just were starting at that stage to become, their buckets were starting to be full, to be so intolerant to wheat that their bodies were creating havoc, and they needed something to soothe the inner lining, and aloe vera will do that. So the most important thing is that you have to stop eating the things that are irritating to your system and listen.
And the thing is, the cause may be unrelated to the symptom in a way. So are you suggesting that, for example, my hay fever could be caused by wheat, but it's the pollen that's just topping up the bucket?
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. It's not always what we think it is.
Some gentle constructive criticism. I'm just following this thought through, hopefully for listeners. Yeah. So the interesting thing to do is, well, here's what I've learned. Just correct me if my thinking is right. Oh, I've got hay fever. Oh, I feel miserable. Oh, it's caused by pollen. Oh, I take this pill and I feel better. Here's the chain of problems. The pill that I'm taking for the hay fever isn't a cure. It is eliminating the symptoms, but the symptoms are my body trying to fix itself.
Yes.
And it may not be the pollen that is the trouble. And then you say to yourself, it could be a myriad of a million things. No, because we know from Sarah that there are some top things that cause allergies, and the top of the pops is wheat. So obviously that's where you'd start. Is that the thinking?
Yes. And for us, it's always about asking questions, Rodney, around the physical, the chemical, and the emotional, because we can create emotional changes. One thought alone can change our physiology, which can have an impact then on how we express health. We know that the foods that we eat can change our physiology and have an expression on how we do health. And the same physically, how we physically move, sports we play, how we sitting for too long, et cetera, have an impact on our physiology and how we express our health. So for us, it's always about asking questions around those three. But the top three allergens, like I said, is the wheat, the dairy, and the refined sugar. So the idea is to stop the wheat. Now, lots of people, and I've spoken about this before, is Kaizen, taking those simple steps to change or to move towards the change that you would like to have in your life. Because if we go cold turkey on some things, it's quite challenging. So for us, what we did, this was back in the early 1990s, we went from wheat and we went to spelt. Now, spelt still has gluten in it, but it's a different structure and the body seems to be able to handle it a lot better. And then we went from spelt, we went to kumut. There was a brand, it was a brand out of Queensland when we moved back home to Australia, that we started having kumut, and then we just started not having any of it all and moving to gluten-free flours or breads that we wanted to have. So people could, these types of ones, so spelt and kumut are referred to as ancient grains. And Eincorn is the oldest, and that is spelled E-I-N-K-O-R-N, Eincorn, and that can be used as a wheat substitute. So it is as it is thousands of years ago. It hasn't been hybridized. It hasn't been changed. So people can go to that. So if let me re-say that. If people are wanting to move away from wheat, they can go to the ancient grains first. They can either go to a sprouted wheat. However, I would probably say bypass that. You can go to spelt. That will have a calming effect on the system. Or you can go to Eincorn, or you can go to Kamut. Now, if you want to go gluten-free altogether, then you can go to things like buckwheat and quinoa and amaranth, etc. And your local health food store will most likely carry these types of flours that you would be able to use in your cooking or in your baking. So that's kind of, you know, I guess the first thing is always to make sure that we're stopping whatever that irritant is, and we're listening to the whispers that our body gives us. The next culprit, I guess we could say, is dairy. Now, dairy in and of itself is not necessarily the culprit, but how it is put together now in our life is. So things like, but dairy, if you can get raw milk from unvaccinated cows, then great. Go do that and see what the impact is on your system. Most people are not having access to that. Most people are having access to the milk that has gone through the pasteurization process. So the pasteurization process of milk is where they add extreme heat. So much heat that it destroys the bacteria, the good and the bad. It just knocks them dead. And in that dying process, that bacteria releases cytotoxins into the milk. And after the heat is applied, the milk is then sent through a filtration process where the dead bacteria is meant to be filtered out. But because this dead bacteria is so small, it's tiny, it gets through the filtration process. So all of a sudden, you, the unassuming consumer, is drinking this milk, store-bought milk, and you're putting dead foreign bacteria into your gut. So you consume the milk, and then over time, it starts to wreak havoc with your intestinal tract, and it's altering your gut flora, and it's contributing to allergic reactions because your body sees it as being foreign and will mount that response, increase its mucus or otherwise little particles are getting through the epithelial lining of the gut, and we are then creating, the gas, the bloating, the irritable bowel syndrome, some diarrhea, and all of a sudden we are, again creating havoc with the internal system. So people that are having dairy may want to look at alternatives, and then they can go to cashew milk, or they can go to almond milk, or they can go to coconut milk. Goat's milk for young children is very good. Sheep's milk, if you can get that. But again, it's all about how that product is brought to market and whether that's going to have an impact on your gut flora.
Fascinating, because what we're learning from you is that it's not wheat or gluten necessarily as such, or milk and milk products necessarily as such. It's the what we've done to the plants themselves and how we grow them, and what we do to the product. So with the plant.
I think also too, Rodney, it has to do, I'm not a germ theorist, so I'm not an outside in person. I'm very much, what does the body have in order to mount a response to something, or what does the body have in order to express health? So that's where we look at the physical, the chemical, and the emotional aspect of the human to say, what is their internal environment like, and how can they cope with something that's gone into their body? But yes, you are right. If you are going to create changes, genetically modify, hybridize, etc., foods and then expect the human body to be able to assimilate that into the system, it's going to see it as foreign because it's not something that is from nature, is a whole food. It's something that has been tampered with. And the body will recognize that as foreign. That's a smart system. That's a healthy system. That's a well-functioning system to be able to recognize that. And that's why I always say we're learning to listen to the whispers that our body gives us. You know, that is so powerful. Like you had when you were there with your food poisoning, you were listening to the whispers. You were trusting yourself. No, I got this. I can just rest. I don't need the water now. I can have it later. You're listening to yourself, which is great.
The interesting thing too, I guess, is that, say, working through an allergy and changing from, say, wheat to spelt or to kamut or einkorn, an ancient flour, and going to raw milk, that in of itself is probably good for us.
Yeah.
So it's not like you are missing out.
No, no. The thing is that our taste buds are so highly addictive, right? They're so addictive to, you know, when you put the wheats together now and you're buying the breads from a store, then it's laced with sugar. And then when we start to make those changes, we go out of routine, our taste is different, it becomes uncomfortable, and people always want to seek comfort. So, and I shouldn't say always, but people want to go back to that comfort. So I kind of, if you do a circle and you've got on the inside of the circle, you've got your history, and the outside of the circle, you've got mystery, right? So we're in our history, and to expand our circle, to expand our awareness, we enter into that mystery zone. And sometimes it becomes, you know, uncomfortable for people to make those changes. And that's why I say, if you start with something simple for yourself, what's an easy switch out to start with, then that's going to be important. The third allergen, if I continue on this allergy, because I've got a couple of other ones coming up that I know you'll probably enjoy. The next one is the refined sugar. I don't have a lot to say about that because I know most people will understand that sugar is not something that is friendly to our system, again, because of how it's put together. So sugar goes through a 9-step process in order to become the bleached white sugar that goes on the table. My suggestion is that we never touch that. Just leave it to the side. Don't buy it. Don't do anything with that. However, you can substitute in coconut sugar. So coconut sugar has lots of minerals in it, and you can do maple syrup, you could do honey, or you could do rapadura. Now, most people might not have heard of rapadura. Rapadura is dehydrated cane sugar, comes straight from the cane sugar. It would probably be quite common in Queensland. It's extracted and then dried, and then it's just powdered down. So there's rapadura as an option. I personally like coconut sugar. I like it. It's got more of a caramel kind of texture to it. And if a recipe said put 100 grams of sugar in, I would always halve it at least, or even down to a third, because it's very, very strong in its taste. So again, that's another easy switch out for people with regards to the sugar. So I want to share with you about bees and respiratory, allergies. So bees are a key to overcoming allergies. When bees collect pollen, they also collect dust and whatever else is in the atmosphere in your area, your local area at that time. If you consume local, raw, unspun organic honey, then you work with your innate immune pathways of your body, and again, of which is 70% is in our gut. You will slowly be able to desensitize yourself to those allergens and possibly even resolve hay fever. Now, it can, and again, this is for educational purposes. I'm just sharing, and I've got some stories to share on that. So it can take up to 6 months but it has to be local, raw, organic, and unspun honey from your area. And if there's a variety of brands that you have that are local to your community, then you can have a variety of the honey. But the key is that it has to be unspun. Unspun is going to be the best, because when it's spun, the honey tends to kind of release the heavy bits and it kind of homogenizes the honey. We don't want that. We want it in its raw, unspun form.
Just so help me here, Sarah.
Yeah.
What does spinning and spun and raw and not raw, what does that actually entail? What is it that they do to honey when they spin it? And what is it they do to it when they take raw honey and do something else? Do they pasteurize it or something?
Probably the simplest way would be cleaning it. You know, once it comes out and you spin it, and then every, you know, all of the, you know, the everything that the bees has collected comes out of it, and then
and so it looks nice.
It's clear. Yeah, it's clear.
But you're missing the elements that you need.
Yes.
To sensitize your body.
Yes. So this is what we've done with some practice members over the years. So, and they've had great results. So 1 teaspoon of the local raw organic and unspun, if you can find it, per day off a wooden spoon and not with anything else. So it just goes straight down your gauntlet. And over time, because this is collected, remember the bees are collecting not only the pollen, but everything else within your community, with everything else, the particles in the atmosphere, and you're putting it straight into your mouth, which is where we first start our immunity, right through to our anus. Remember, this is where our immune system starts from. So having a teaspoon of honey per day for up to 6 months. Now, a lot of people are going to go, wow, that's a lot of sugar to have. And whilst that is, we've got to remember that honey is like a complete food. And most people may not know that back in the day during, you know, the Roman legions, when they were on food shortages, they would actually give a teaspoon of honey to the soldiers, the marching, the soldiers, and that would sustain them for a day of marching. So wow. Honey is very, very powerful. And when the bees are doing all that collection for us, and we get to eat that in its raw form and local, then we help to desensitize our body to the pollens which are in the air, the dust which is in the air, and other particles that may be around us that can trigger those particular responses within our body. And again, it's an innate way and a genius way of being able to desensitize the body. And rather than saying desensitize, more so adapt to our environment in where we live. But the key is local. So don't go and buy, you know, a honey from the South Island if you live on the North Island and vice versa, you know, and don't go and buy something if you live in the Auckland area buying it from the Bay of Plenty. No, get it from your surrounds, your local area, because then you start to build immunity to the local things within your area. And we've had, you know, success over the years with practice members who have, you know, given that a go with great results. So again, this is for educational purposes. So another fun one, well, I shouldn't say fun because most people might think it's disgusting actually, Rodney, but it has to do with your nose. So if you remember, I think on our last show, we spoke about the nose and I was talking about how amazing and ingenious it is. Well, the nose works like a bee does. So, you know, when bees go and collect their pollen, they put it behind their knees and they collect it all. Our nose does the same thing. We breathe in all of these particles from around our local area, and our nose filters out what can go in and what can't. And what is left over, we would refer to as snot. or you know, green stuff or stuff up the nose. And I think the last time when we spoke about little Johnny and blowing his nose. I think that's what it was. Yeah, blowing the nose. Yes. And how that is actually a learned behavior, that we see the mum put the hanky over the nose and, you know, trying to encourage the child to blow the nose, and how your mum had, you know, you were never able to blow your nose. But picking your nose is an innate behavior. It's innate in us. We don't have, there's not someone there that's sitting down teaching your child how to pick their nose. It's an innate behavior from a very, very young age. Picking your nose and then eating it is also an innate behavior. And children do it constantly. And they do it because it increases the immunity of their body. Because now they are eating and digesting the particles from their surroundings to help build the immunity to it. So just like we eat the bee, we eat the honey because the bee's done that collection for us, we eat the snot because our nose has done the job for us. So next time, I guess, a grandparent or a mother that's seeing little Johnny pick their nose, you know, sitting on the floor watching TV or whatever, don't have a go at them. Don't shame them and say we shouldn't do that. Just realize that there is an innate intelligence that is working in order to help little Johnny with building his immunity to his local area that then creates greater adaptation to the environment where he is. And I don't, you know, that's something that, you know, I've never seen, I mean, it's something that I've always thought, but I've never seen it written down anywhere or, you know, it's something that we don't think
of. Because all kids do it.
All kids do it. Adults do it too. You know, everyone does it. It's an innate response to something. And it's you build immunity from that. Now, there's social etiquette around that. You know, parents might want to teach their children the social etiquette of doing that. But when you when Johnny is doing that, if we choose to be the observer of our children, then we see the innate undertakings that are naturally occurring. And if everybody does it, lots of kids do it, lots of people do it, then there is an immune system building. There's an inbuilt system to be able to build immunity to our local areas.
Well, I'm a little flawed. Isn't that amazing? I recall... I'm a sort of magpie of information. It's nothing systematic. I recall reading that babies being born through the birth canal pick up germs around that area, and that's the start of them building up their immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And babies born by cesarean are born aseptically. Have you heard that one?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, yeah. And if I can do a reframe for you on that vaginal canal, it's not germs that are there, it's this symbiotic relationship between
it's the good bacteria, isn't it? It's the good bacteria. Sorry, you're right. They're picking up the good bacteria that they need in their gut, aren't they?
Yeah, and also on the outside of their skin. Because that area, contrary to what people believe, you know, like if a mucus plug is gone and, you know, labor's underway, and then they're like, oh, you've got to do something, the baby's got to come really quickly because you've got this open, you know, open to the outside hole, let's say, for want of a word, anything can get inside it and germs can get there and that can be dangerous. And I always say to women, it doesn't matter, you can have up to 7 days when the mucus plug is gone, because that area of the body is so sterile that nothing's going to get in there. Like, that's the innate wisdom of the body. It's not going to just like open something and go, yep, okay, like let's just let everything in. No, it doesn't do that. Your body is so innately and intuitively designed that it's incredible. And you're right that all the flora that they pick up when they go through that vaginal canal is extraordinary. I think I even went to granny's house then. I digress, but anyway, I'll come back.
Tell me.
So you were going to say something?
Yes. What's your view of soap and hand sanitizers on the skin?
Don't use them at all.
Because they're cleaning off the fat and the bacteria, but taking the good bacteria as well, and therefore opening your skin to infection.
Yeah, just, you know, it strips away this extraordinary, you know, flora and barrier that we have on our skin. I wrote an article actually on the website. If people want to go to vital-wellbeing.com and go to the blog, and it's called Yuck, Wash Your Hands. And it's all about, why we're so obsessed with germs, you know. And again, if we have these companies that have got deep pockets that are advertising those chemicals on TV, like my dad said, find out what everybody's doing and run like hell in the opposite direction. So if people are lacing themselves with that, don't do that. You know, we don't need to do that. Our skin is extraordinary. But I wanted to, oh, two more to go, Rodney,
yes,
just on this note after the nose. And it had to do with the peanuts, because lots of people have reactions to peanuts, right? So peanut allergies really didn't exist until the 1960s and 70s when vaccines came out with peanut oil in them. And it was the peanut oil was contained in what's called an adjuvant 65, I think was the name of it. And an adjuvant is just a chemical that increases or supposedly increases the body's immune response to a vaccine. So the adjuvant 65 was put into the flu shot when it first came out in the 1960s. And it was put into the HPV vaccine, so the human papillomavirus vaccines, in 1985. So now what we see then, if you inject now peanut, something that contains peanut oil, directly into a muscle, then you bypass any of the normal immune pathways, like we've just been talking about, from the mouth to the anus. 70% of the immune system sits in our gut. So when you bypass it, you're more than likely going to trigger an allergic reaction, because the body senses, oh my gosh, this is foreign, I've got to build something immediately to it. Cut to, this child is now growing up and going to school, let's say, or later in life, and they eat a peanut, then the peanut's going to trigger an immune response because the body sees the peanut as foreign, because it's already established that peanut and a peanut oil is not going to be good for the body. So one way, and it's more of a common way now to work with allergies, is to slowly over time desensitize the body. In other words, giving the allergen to the person in low quantities will assist with their immune building, so that in later life they're not going to continually create an immune response to it. I'll give you an example. When our middle boy was about two, we were living on the Sunshine Coast, and he reacted to a plant, rash all over his body. So he was a skin response. And rather than having us go, oh my gosh, and race to the garden and remove the plant, we decided to leave the plant and allow him to be around the plant, so that he would then slowly start to build his immunity to that. And so he did. So it's the same thing with peanuts. We don't build immunity to anything by avoiding it or getting it artificially, as in artificially put into the body. So we don't build immunity by avoiding anything. We only build immunity by being around and in the environment of, in order to build the immunity. And again, when we look at the tissue healing time of body, did I mention this before? I think I might have when we were speaking about weed. I'm not sure. But any of these, if people take any of these steps in a Kaizen way, like they want to remove wheat, they want to remove dairy, they want to remove sugar, again, do the Kaizen way. But in order to see the benefits of what's taking place, then you've got to be doing that for at least 2 to 3 months. Now, the standard average tissue healing time of the body is 8 weeks or 2 months. And it doesn't matter what tissue that is. That can be neural tissue. It can be organ tissue. It doesn't matter. The average tissue healing time is 8 weeks. So in order for us to see the change that we want to have in our body, we've got to do it for a longer period of time. So 2 to 3 months would be ideal. So no wheat, no refined sugar, no dairy for that length of time. Have your bee pollen, have your honey from your local area, and start to work with your innate, you know, all-knowing, all-wise pathways that are housed within your body, and listen to those whispers that your body gives you. But if you're going to make the change and you're only going to do it for 2 weeks, well, you know, you will be disappointed, because, you know, the body takes time in order to replenish itself.
Sarah, that's the most wonderful interview and discussion ever. I'm actually blown away.
Oh, thank you, Rodney.
That is just so much amazing knowledge. And I mean, that jolly peanut thing, I'm sure I speak for listeners, because it's always struck me as odd, people getting these anaphylactic and they've got to have a pen and have a peanut and they can drop dead. And they were injecting peanut oil into babies.
Yeah. Look, you know that the camp is out in terms of, if you go and look up research, and people will say that no, the peanut oil doesn't contribute to it, and yes, it does contribute to it. I just always look at the body intuitively and innately. And if you're putting something into your body via an injection and bypassing any form of immunity, you're going to create a big challenge within your body. Your immune system is going to go haywire. So, because it's bypassed the ring of fire, which starts in our throat, and then it bypasses everything else as it goes through, that goes through the gut. So for me, you know, natural immunity is always going to be the way. But for me, I look at the peanut oil so they say they don't put peanut oil in vaccines anymore. However, just because they say a name, and then you've got to go and look up what that is that they've actually put in and find out what the ingredients of that is. So it's kind of like this funnel, right? It's not like, oh, see, there's no peanut oil there. But when you go and you've got to click on like the adjuvant 65, that's a patented one, and then find out what that's made up of, if that makes sense.
You are a total treasure, Sarah. And I've loved this interview more than any I've done, because it's been just a tour de force.
Thank you.
And I'm sure I speak on behalf of all our listeners. We feel truly blessed to have you along and to share that with us. Remind us again what your webpage is.
Yeah, so people can go to vital-wellbeing.com. And they can go to the blog. There's, you know, great articles on there. They can go to our events page and find out where I'm speaking next. And by the way, Rodney, I was just in Gisborne and Havelock North, so over Hawke's Bay area, and the amount of people that come up to me and go, I love your show. Rodney is such a treasure. So I want to give you that feedback. I don't, you know, sometimes when you're sitting there behind a microphone and it feels like dead space that we're talking to because we can't see the audience or hear them, right? But I wanted you to know that there are so many people out there that love you and love what you do and, you know, and how you do interview and you think and you listen and you act and, you know, and that's a wonderful thing. So thank you for having
me.
You're
very kind. I'm very blessed with Melissa. I actually was just talking to our team on chat. And yeah. I suffer, I'm going to have to talk to Jerry Pipes about this, I suffer imposter syndrome my whole life.
Lots and of people do, actually.
Yeah, and so I think I'm hopeless. And I always think I'm going to be found out, and they're going to say, oh, you're useless at this. So I struggle with it because I think, but I will say this, and I think this is the key that has helped me. With Reality Check Radio, I feel at home and I feel free and I don't feel any need to pretend anything. And when you go, I've hosted radio shows before and of course I've been in the public eye and you're always conscious of the need to, well, I always was, to present something, you know, like to be something. And not just take it easy and be yourself. And for some reason, I think the COVID years did that to us, that we sort of, it broke us free from the need to fit in to our groups. And so I go on Reality Check Radio and I just be myself. And I think that's authenticity and it's not any pretense. That you can feel it, can't you, amongst our group and our listeners.
Yes.
And you feel the same. Our listeners send us texts and emails, which are so from the heart and telling us about their lives and they open up. And
find how beautiful is that? You know,
it's so wonderful. But take it away from me because your show today, man, oh, man, I just can't believe it, what I've learned. Thank you so much, Sarah. You have a wonderful day. Give our very, very best to your wonderful husband.
Do that, Rodney.
And we can't wait to hear more from you and have you back on the show. I'm going to go away for a little while.
Where are you going?
Well, I've got a son.
Is this just between you and I? No one's listening?
No. No way. I've got a son who lives in New York.
Oh, lovely. That's right, yes.
He's my big son.
Yeah.
And he's just had a little baby.
Oh.
So he's got a four-year-old son and now a little girl, and she's so beautiful.
Aww.
And so I'm taking my oldest daughter, who's 13.
Fantastic.
We're going to go to Vegas, and she's going to compete in jiu-jitsu there at two competitions.
Wow.
And my son's bringing his son over to watch.
Wow.
And then I've been promising that I'd take my daughter to New York for 3 years because it's such a great opportunity because my son lives there and works there.
Yeah.
And for her to see a big city. And I thought it's easier than the whole family, just take one.
Yep.
And so this is our, and it's been put off because of COVID. I couldn't get in because I weren't jabbed and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be doing that.
Fantastic. That is so awesome.
It is awesome.
You'll have a great time.
I have to say I'm totally ill-prepared. I just end up always hopping on the plane with a ticket in my phone and a couple of clothes, but we're doing it. You take care, Sarah. So I'll be back probably next time we talk.
Lovely.
But don't tell anyone.
No, just between you and I.
Take care, Sarah. That was Dr. Sarah Ferrant. Isn't she wonderful? We're truly blessed. And you can send us a text, 2057, email us at inbox@radilycheck.radio. Peanuts, vaccines, the link. Oh my goodness, what do they do to us?
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.